Hello and welcome to Adults Do Disney. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Lawrence.
And today we're going to talk about something that we actually talked about last week, but we're going to add extra new bits to it because exciting stuff has happened.
Yeah.
So what were we talking about last week then, Lawrence?
We were talking about Disney attractions that could become movies or have become movies already. And we're going to continue this because we've got a few updates to add to this, because there's some things that we've discovered and some things that we have been told.
That are in the pipeline.
Yes.
Hot news.
Hot news. More hot news.
Although first, we're going to start with the hottest news of them all, which is our own review of a film that came out 2 years ago.
yeah. Nothing like... This is worse than the BBC for speed of news.
Oh, controversial. Yeah. Oh, criticising the BBC.
Yeah, I've never heard that.
Yeah. Oh.
So anyway, we're going to review a film called Tomorrowland, which we briefly mentioned at the end of the previous podcast.
So it came out in 2015.
Yes.
And Tomorrowland is, as fans of the park will know, is a section of each of the Disney parks.
Yeah, it's a section in Magic Kingdom, it's a section in the original Disneyland, and then it became Discoveryland in Paris.
And the rides that Tomorrowland normally has are the Space Mountains.
Yep.
What else?
Carousel
of Progress in Florida.
In Florida, there's always there's the Autopia ride, which is one of Walt's originals, which is sometimes called the Tomorrowland Speedway.
The Mum Jiggler?
The Mum Jiggler, as we call it, because of its effect on mums. Which is the car driving ride. And there's normally some sort of rocket type ride, you know, like it's called the Orbitron in Paris, which is a sort of...
It looks very steampunk.
Yeah, that one does.
Oh, Tomorrowland in Paris looks very steampunk in general, doesn't it? Whereas I'd say in Florida, it looks more like the Jetsons.
Yes. Well, originally it was Walt's sort of optimistic idea of what the future would look like.
Yeah. Which brings us to the movie.
Yeah. So this was... We were advised to watch Tomorrowland by Andrew Foxley on Twitter. Hello,
Andrew. Hi, Andrew.
Yeah, after we mentioned it in the last podcast, because we hadn't seen it, and it does feel like something that we should have seen.
Yeah, definitely. It totally passed me by. I don't think I was even aware of it.
I think I was vaguely aware of it, but actually I think 2015 was the first year that we went to Florida, and I think I thought, I know, I'll watch this after we get back from Florida, so I have a kind of, you know, an idea of it.
When did it come out in 2015?
I think it was early 2015. I've got a feeling it might have even been an option on the plane.
We were all a dither from wedding plans, I think.
Yeah, we missed all sorts of stuff because of that.
Because we were in a love bubble.
A love bubble. So anyway, what is Tomorrowland about?
So let me tell you the plot. Mm-hmm. So George Clooney, he plays this brainy science kid who's invited to another dimension. So in this dimension, there's a place called Tomorrowland. Mm-hmm. And Tomorrowland is like a futuristic city in which dreamers of all walks of life are invited to come and participate in the building of this amazing place.
Yeah.
So it's very technology-based.
And the idea is that it's there as a place to experiment with new technologies, which we can then take back to our reality to make our world a better place. That's the idea, isn't it?
And again, having mentioned the Jetsons, it's very Jetsons.
It is, rather.
Yeah, it looks like New York modern New York meets the Jetsons.
Yeah, they've got the kind of gleaming white skyscrapers of that sort of mid-20th century visions of the future, isn't it?
Yeah. And you pointed out that actually the whole idea of the place is very much like Epcot. The original idea of Epcot.
Yeah, so Walt's original idea of Epcot.
Not the weird food-based place that it is today.
The world's most expensive food court, which it is currently.
But the original idea of Epcot, what does it stand for?
Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow.
That's it. And that's essentially what this Tomorrowland City and this other dimension in the movie is.
So when Walt started buying up land in Florida in the 60s for what he called the Florida Project at the time, he wanted to build a theme park, which would be modelled on his Disneyland, which became the Magic Kingdom. That went ahead as planned. And he also wanted to build a city called Epcot, which stood for Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow, which was designed to be a functional city where people lived and worked and got on with their lives in a normal way.
But he had designed the infrastructure so that everything was more convenient.
Yeah,
and the nasty things like polluting cars and things like that were kept underground.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's supposed to look clean and lovely and idyllic, but also very city-like.
It was a kind of gleaming utopia, wasn't it?
Yeah. Obviously, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But that is clearly, I'd say, the inspiration for this film.
The main influence behind this film. Yeah, and the feel of the film, it all ties in with sort of Walt's own ideas of how we should think about the future. He had a very positive attitude towards the future and
progress.
And progress, yes, he was obsessed with this idea of progress.
Almost a Victorian attitude, I'd say.
It was rather, yeah. He was very such an industrial figure that progress, he valued progress above all else, really.
Which is probably why this movie, it starts in the 1964 New York World's Fair, where Walt Disney debuted The Carousel of Progress and It's a Small World.
Yeah.
And the exciting thing about those debuts were the animatronics involved, the technology involved,
yeah,
weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. God, so, it's amazing the influence that World's Fair has had, actually. Because if you think about it, not only did it spawn a lot of the ideas behind all of the Disney parks as we now know them, but it was also the core of Men in Black, which I just remembered. Do you remember that film?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
The idea in Men in Black is that the two sort of flying saucer shaped dishes that were the sort of main focal point of the 1964 World's Fair in New York and are now just sort of hanging around almost derelict. They are real spaceships, and Vincent D'Onofrio's character in that is trying to get in them to go back to his planet.
I bet part of it, though, is the quaintness of what now looks like the quaintness of the World's Fair. There's something very optimistic and very idyllic almost, yeah, about you know, the way they dressed it up, the aesthetics, what I mean, is of the World Fair.
Well, it's all got
it's very
that.
Pretty, isn't it? So it's the acceptable face of technology, I'd say.
Yeah, it's Walt Disney's very showman-like face of technology, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, because it had both entertainment, leisure stuff and you know,
and
other stuff.
Scientific breakthroughs.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so in the movie, we start at the World Fair because young George Clooney is bringing his rocket pack to people who are going to invest in his rocket
big
pack.
Big science man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but and as he's walking up the road to the New York World Fair area, it's a great big beautiful tomorrow is playing in the background.
We get the Sherman Brothers song from the Carousel of Progress,
which is from Tomorrowland.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which had its birth at the World's Fair. So it's all a bit of a big Disney backslap, isn't it?
It is, really, because if you didn't know that, if you weren't very acquainted with the parks, you would just see it as the opening of the film, which is supposed to grip you and excite you and interest you in what's to come and, you know, and sow the seeds of themes and all that kind of stuff. And I would argue that it doesn't do that.
Yeah, it's possibly a bit of fan service for Disney lovers, as opposed to being something that actually necessarily moves the plot of the film along in the way that it needs to move.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like it's a bit redundant when it comes to the narrative.
Yeah. So our main complaint with the film was that it did take quite a long time to get going, we thought.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot of good elements to it. It's very interesting. But I'd say it engages the mind, but not necessarily the emotions.
Yes. Should we reveal what the twist is about the 1964 World's Fair at the beginning?
No, let's leave that.
Okay, so it is kind of a part of the plot, that world, the World Fair setting, but it's pretty far-fetched, but it's quite funny. It drew me in the first sort of few minutes because of what a crazy idea it was.
Oh, the small world.
Yeah, okay, well, we've practically given it away.
No, not really. No, okay. That's a bit of a leap from there to there.
All right, well, if you are intrigued, the first 10 minutes alone, if you're a Disney Parks fan, is quite interesting, so do have a look.
Actually, I have to say, I would have preferred to have gone back to 1964 further on in the film, because it was a very nice setting and everything, but the fact that you never go back to it, that's why I felt like it was a little bit redundant.
Unsatisfying, maybe.
Yeah, maybe that was it. I don't know, there was just, I just felt like I was, it's like when you get celebrity cameos and you're going, oh look, it's Thingy, and oh it's what's his face in sitcoms and things,
and then they never come back again, right?
Yeah, and also there's that kind of, you're taken out of the action slightly, you're not so much immersed in the story because you're too busy going, oh right, and
oh, they're doing a thing,
yeah, and that's the thing, you know, you remember, it's what's in the Carousel of Progress.
It's a bit distracting, isn't it?
Yeah, just a tiny bit.
So there were some flaws with the film, but I did think there were definitely some good set pieces in it,
some great set pieces.
The Paris sequence is excellent.
Yeah, there's a sequence on the Eiffel Tower with that brings Jules Verne into it.
Yeah, so it basically pays tribute to Paris's own answer to Tomorrowland, which is the retrofuturistic Victorian discovery land, which is all influenced by Jules Verne and H.G. Wells and Leonardo da Vinci and all those sorts of characters. And that is referenced very nicely in the film.
Yeah, they try to shove a lot in, actually.
Yeah, there's
a
lot going on in the film. It's quite long, we thought.
Yeah.
And so it may possibly a little too long. It could have done with an edit.
Yeah.
But the overall message of it is that a negative mindset that we're heading inexorably towards the apocalypse doesn't help anyone, and that you have to basically think positively to change the world for the better.
Yeah, which is quite interesting, because George Clooney starts the film basically going, we're all in trouble, the world's we're killing the planet.
He's a curmudgeon, isn't he? Basically.
Yeah, yeah, but they're showing images of terrible things like the ice caps melting and things, aren't
they?
Yeah,
and wars and
horrible... Yeah, it's quite a grim start, really. It is. And I mean, it's done in a kind of... Hey, you're being a bit negative, George.
Yeah.
No, not George, I don't know what his character's called.
call him George.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But so it's done in a sort of, now then, who's the grumpy guts?
Yeah.
But it's genuinely quite a disturbing start to a
film.
It is.
It's an odd start to a Disney film. They're full of surprises, aren't they, still, even to this day?
Yeah, yeah. So their message was, that kind of negative attitude doesn't help anyone, guys.
Mm.
And if we are heading towards disaster, which we are, we need to do something about it. But with a smile and a wink.
There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow.
It's a bit whistle while you work, isn't it?
A little bit.
Come on, guys, we've got work to do.
Yeah. Hugh Laurie's very good.
Oh, Hugh Laurie's great.
Hugh Laurie's always good.
Hugh Laurie should be in everything.
Yeah, he's particularly good in this.
Mm,
yeah.
He really is.
He was the highlight for me, personally.
Yeah, he's a very good, complicated villain.
Yeah.
He comes to a sticky Disney end.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a spoiler.
Yeah, it's a kind of the biggest spoiler you could possibly drop into.
Should we beat that bit out?
No, no. Okay. It's 2 years old, this film.
Yeah.
It's fine, it's fair game.
He comes to a sticky Disney end and you do think, oh.
It's a bit of a shame.
Why have they killed him all?
Yeah.
Anyway, so the reason we're talking about Tomorrowland film.
Yeah.
Is because we wanted to also talk about what other films you could make out of the Disney parks.
Yes. Yeah, so
which
last,
we did a bit in last week.
Well, so last week we focused on what attractions, rides and shows could become films. But since they made a pretty functional film out of an entire themed land in the Disney parks, Tomorrowland, what other lands in Disney parks could you turn into films as a whole?
Well, we've already talked about Frontierland.
Yeah.
We said that Disney could really do with doing a new cowboy film.
It's high time we had a good new Western.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But how about Fantasyland?
So how would you do Fantasyland? Because that's lots of different characters who basically in and of themselves have their own stories. And Fantasyland is the most sort of intellectual property heavy land of all of the Disney lands, isn't it? So you've got lots of film characters already.
Yeah, well, because they borrowed from lots of very much out of copyright stories, didn't they? Charles Perrault. So that's the French author of Beauty and the Beast. Oh, no, he didn't do Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, no, he didn't do Beauty and the Beast.
No. Beauty and the Beast was done by a lady called something.
Insert fact.
Beauty and the Beast was written by French novelist Gabrielle Suzanne Barbeau de Villeneuve.
So, but Charles Perrault did do Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella.
Yeah, that's right. And the brothers Grimm did Snow White and Rapunzel, but they haven't done a movie yet. Rapunzel.
Sure they have. Tangled.
Oh, Tangled, of course they have. Oh my God, I love Tangled. What am I talking about?
Tangled.
Hans Christian Andersen, Little Mermaid, Snow Queen. Snow Queen, obviously, that turned into Frozen.
Being Frozen.
And then there's Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll, and Peter Pan was J.M. Barrie.
So they're the Brits, the British contingent. These are all presences within Fantasyland.
Yeah,
they?
Yeah, and obviously they all have their own worlds.
Yeah.
And you can't stick one castle next to another because all the princesses have their own castles, don't they? So they have their own lands, they have their own kingdoms.
They do, but this reminds me of a Sky series that was out about 15 years ago. Or maybe longer than, I think it was 2000-ish, around the turn of the millennium, called The Tenth Kingdom, which was, well, it was pretty hokey at times, but it actually had some really good ideas.
So is this where all the fairy tale characters meet each other? Because that's what we're saying. If you did do a Fantasyland film, you'd have to have all the Disney princesses meeting up, really, wouldn't you?
Really, you would. And that's kind of what they did in this thing, The Tenth Kingdom. It was like the idea of it was that it was set some time after all of these stories had taken place, and the kind of happily ever after that they all finish with doesn't last forever. And now things have gone sour in the land of fairy tales. You've got corrupt governments going on. Everything's sort of gone to shit.
Dystopian.
Yeah, it's kind of dystopian fairy tales, really.
But with a wink and a smile.
There's a great, big, beautiful... So, yeah, in that you have Anne Margaret playing a 200-year-old Cinderella, who's had loads of plastic surgery and she's sort of got dementia. And
how
she's
is she 200? Why isn't she supposed to be a human being? How does a human being get to 200?
Well, you know, it's the land of magic though, isn't it?
So magic means you live for longer.
She's got unnatural, prolonged life, like Gollum. And she's basically, she's kind of, because she's the queen, she has employed the best plastic surgeons and stuff to keep her young. But she's sort of a very, very old woman in the body.
Just keeps swapping out her organs.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. So she's kind of being kept alive by magic.
And she's essentially Frankenstein.
Yeah, and under her watch, the kingdom's all kind of fallen apart. But you've got all of these different fairy tale characters together, and it was all done in quite a tongue-in-cheek, quite a funny sort of way. So I think in the with Disney at the helm, that kind of concept could be very good.
So it's a bit like Shrek, isn't it, or the Lego movie?
Yeah, so the nice thing about the Lego movie particularly is the sort of incongruous meeting of all sorts of different famous characters, either from comic books or whatever, coming together, and how would they all get on is the question.
It's like fan fiction done par excellence.
It is very fan fiction-y, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And as we were saying before we started recording, it's a bit like Toy Story, isn't it?
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because the joy of Toy Story is watching Barbie hanging out with the little crappy green soldier men.
No, it's brilliant. And it is what you do when you're a kid yourself.
Yeah, so all the recognisable toys of childhood that shouldn't go together because they totally don't fit together.
Although some of them actually in Fantasyland would fit together because, as the internet has pointed out,
they're closer, aren't they? Yeah.
Ariel is related to Hercules, isn't she? So yeah. Ariel, princess, is Hercules' cousin because she's the daughter of Poseidon.
Who's the brother of Zeus.
Yeah. And obviously Hercules is... His dad is Zeus.
The son of Zeus and Hera,
so
isn't that
there
correct?
You go. So maybe those two could go off on an adventure?
That's a weird thought, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose myths and legends as well as fairy tales, there's a bit of overlap, isn't there?
Yeah.
I guess.
But they're estranged, particularly Disney's incarnation of Hercules and Ariel. They're estranged two characters to put together, aren't they?
Well, their animation style doesn't fit. So
no,
I don't know what
sure.
they'd do about that. Would they make Hercules' lines a bit softer?
Or they make her a bit weirder. But yeah. She's sort of a bit of a famous idiot, really, isn't she, Ariel?
Well, I think that's later interpretations of Ariel. Everyone loved Ariel for ages, and then everyone looks a bit closer at her motivations and
her
actions.
She's a pretty weak character,
and
though,
went,
isn't she?
Oh, dude.
Yeah, she's pretty
weird. Gave up everything because you spotted some boy?
Yeah. Who wouldn't want to be like the daughter of a basically king of the sea, a kind of mythical god creature of the sea where you're royalty and the world is amazing?
And you've got gadgets and gizmos galore.
Yeah.
And enter into a clearly dodgy deal with someone. You wouldn't buy a secondhand car off her, would you?
No,
off
for sure.
Surface.
Yeah, and she's a terrible feminist, of course, because she tricks her into saying that. Tricks her by saying that men like women who don't say much, so she loses her voice as a result of that.
I mean, it is based on the original, where then she feels like she's dancing on knives.
Oh yeah, it's a very dark ending. The original,
and then she turns into foam, doesn't she? Sea foam.
That's right.
Right,
yeah.
At the end.
Happy stories.
Yeah. I mean, most of the old fairy tales are extremely unpleasant.
Yeah.
And they end with someone who's done a very minor moral failing.
Being judged extremely harshly.
Yeah,
right?
And being tortured for eternity.
Yeah, they're very cautionary, these tales. And often the punishment does not befit the crime, does it?
No, not at all. It's like, oh, you stole an extra slice of cake. Damnation
for a thousand years.
Evil will pluck out your liver.
Yes,
every
and
day.
You will be painfully eaten by crows, and Cerberus the dog will rip you apart.
Or nibble on your toes.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, we wanted to also talk about, though, the fact that they are kind of doing what we've just. Not about that. They're doing what we just said with the Disney princesses in Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Now, Wreck-It Ralph 1 was amazing.
I loved Wreck-It Ralph.
It was really good. It was. I feel like the.
It's the two halves of my nerdy personality, you know, so Disney and video games.
Coming together in one
beautiful
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really good script, really good story, great characters.
Oh, so good.
So we're excited about Wreck-It Ralph 2. Not least because it's going to feature for the first time a scene where all of the previous Disney princesses are going to come together. They're going to meet in the video game world, presumably.
Well, I don't know
Ralph.
If it's the video game world, because Wreck-It Ralph 2 is based in the internet.
Oh, that's
it?
True, yes.
And the Disney princesses on the internet, yeah. Well, they're doing all kinds of things.
Well, that remains to be seen.
And they are meeting each other on the internet, sometimes intimately.
In naughty ways.
While dressed in strange outfits.
It depends which websites you frequent.
Actually, what they might do, because it's well known, isn't it, that the Disney princesses on the internet, they've been interpreted as everything. Like, they've been interpreted as different types of car and different types of wash flannel.
Wasn't there a thing going around from, like, The Onion or one of those satirical websites, which was, see what your favourite Disney princesses look like as lukewarm bowls of warm water, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's that kind of thing. There is literally, if you can think of a Disney princess as a thing, like as a dog, as a cat,
then there's a BuzzFeed article about it.
Yeah.
So who are we going to get in Wreck-It Ralph 2?
Well,
Wreck-It together?
Ralph might be meeting like Ariel, but the teacup version of Ariel.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I wonder if they're going to be themselves.
Yeah, they might not be. They might be these weird versions.
Could
which
be.
Is interesting and but great what, and why but, I love Wreck-It Ralph.
But what we do know is that the Wreck-It Ralph is going to feature together Mandy Moore, who played Rapunzel, Jodie Benson, who played Ariel, Paige O'Hara, who was Belle, Linda Larkin, who was Jasmine, Kristen Bell, who was Anna, Kelly MacDonald, who was Merida, Annika Noni Rose, who was Tiana, Irene Bedard, who was Pocahontas, and Auli Cravalho, who was Moana.
Cool.
They're all going to be together in one scene in Wreck-It Ralph.
Ah,
and they
so
all appeared
cool.
together on stage at the D23 Expo to tell everyone about this.
So that's interesting, because it's none of the really old princesses then, is it? Is that purely because they couldn't get the voice actors?
Could be. Maybe it didn't feel right to,
resurrect
to have
them.
Snow White or something like that being voiced by someone else.
Yeah, I guess so. Although,
given that they resurrected Peter Cushing to be in Star Wars, and he's only been dead about 20 years.
Yeah, and this isn't animation, so it's not like they are replicating the...
They're not actually replicating the actual living human face of a dead man.
Yeah, I'm so curious as to what it's going to be like. But if it does well, presumably they could then take the princesses off onto a spin-off movie.
Yes. And also, apparently, I heard as well... you know, we mentioned that you could very easily make a good roller coaster out of the Sugar Rush ride.
Yeah.
Sugar Rush game in Wreck-It Ralph. This is apparently a plan.
No.
I've heard this now since then.
Is it a plan since we said it?
Well, maybe it is.
Our homework?
Stop it, guys. Damn Disney. But yeah, apparently this is in the pipeline.
Just ask Disney. Just ask if it's okay and we'll say yes.
Yeah,
and you can have our ideas.
This is what the internet is all about. It's being credited.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to be paid. Just ask.
Just ask.
That's all.
But apparently, yes, the Imagineers are waiting to see how well Wreck-It Ralph 2 does in November 2018 before that ride gets given the green light or not.
So and where would that be?
In Tomorrowland.
No way!
There was an idea that maybe it would replace... Autopia.
Oh my
car
god,
ride.
That's exactly what we said, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
We're on the same page.
Which means
then.
We definitely thought of it first.
When did this get released, this information?
I don't know. I heard about it on on the Disney Dish podcast, which I've been listening to.
Yeah.
And I think this, it's been floating around for a little while, but not that long ago, I don't think.
Right. Okay.
So whether it came before or after the podcast where we talked about it. Yeah. Remains to be seen.
But we didn't copy it.
We didn't copy it. We didn't know about it. Okay. Get off our case already.
So anyway, let's talk about the other areas in the Disney parks and whether they are going to be made into films or have been or whatever.
Yeah, so Tomorrowland has been done. Fantasyland we've talked about. Frontierland we've talked about. That leaves Adventureland.
Adventureland has already been mined for a lot of ideas.
Content already, yeah. So, of course, the most obvious one being Pirates of the Caribbean, the biggest of these sorts of film, ride-to-film things that has ever been, right?
Then, I mean, there's Swiss Family Treehouse, obviously Swiss Family Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
That was a film made in a very long time ago.
The 60s, I believe.
Yeah. I loved it as a kid.
It was one of those sort of string of very nice Disney live action films, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The first major one, which was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
That could be redone.
That would make quite a nice...
It's got a sort of innocence to it that might feel a bit old-fashioned.
Is it a bit twee, do you reckon?
No, I wouldn't say it's twee. There's enough adventure, but I don't know. There's just a sort of... It's very unworldly, I suppose. Well, it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be a family, obviously, that are separated from the modern world.
Yeah.
And have to make a life on this desert island.
Yeah.
But yeah, who knows? Who knows if that could be remade?
It could be rebooted.
If there'd be an appetite for that. I don't know.
Maybe not these days.
I mean, we talked about the Enchanted Tiki Room in the last podcast, and I came up with a brilliant idea that if it does get made at some point, I want you to all know that I had it first, okay?
Yeah. It's not like we've got a chip on our shoulder or anything.
No, I just desperately want
But you
to
came up with the idea that it could be a film that features a load of
migratory birds
that end up on a tropical island but are actually from Ireland, France, Germany, and where's the last one from? Spain, isn't he?
Yeah.
Spanish. So these birds end up somewhere.
With a load of sexy ladybirds.
Sexy lady macaws.
Who would, in modern terms, would have their own stuff going on.
They probably would. They wouldn't just sing that sort of twee sexy song that comes when they descend down from the ceiling. But yeah, that could be a good film.
Yeah.
Anyway, and
that leaves the Jungle Cruise.
The Jungle Cruise.
Which, it turns out, it's happening.
It is happening.
So they're making a film out of the Jungle Cruise.
Yes.
Now, let's explain the Jungle Cruise.
So this was brought to our attention, we should say, by Rob T. Andrews on Twitter.
Thank you, Rob. So let's talk about the actual ride first, because it's one of Walt's original rides, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an original.
It was there when the park opened.
It was a Disneyland opening day attraction. One of the very few that are still around.
Basically. I read a very good article on crack.com about the opening day of Disneyland.
Oh, it was a disaster, wasn't it?
Yeah, apparently so. And someone fell in the Jungle Cruise.
Oh my God.
And they didn't stop. They didn't stop the boat. They just kept it going because apparently the park was so incredibly packed that they just had to keep everything going.
Oh, and also I heard as well that the Autopia ride, the Mum Jiggler, that we've talked about a lot, when it was first installed in Disneyland, there were no guide rails. There were no security measures of any kind. So the kids were literally just driving miniature cars. And there were apparently a lot of broken ankles and stuff. It was basically before they invented health and safety. Incredible.
And also, apparently, a lot of the rides weren't even ready on the first day.
No, Peter Pan's flight came out 3 days later.
And yet people were queuing for it. And the Disneyland employees were going, no, this ride's not open. And people didn't believe them because everything was so chaotic. They were just like, no, you're just trying to get us to go away just to ease up the total lack of space.
Yeah. Weren't there also children eating like icing sugar or something?
Oh, yeah, they ran out of food. So they just started passing out the raw cane syrup and things like that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, crazy. Anyway, so sorry, back to the Jungle Cruise. So the Jungle Cruise was there on opening day. Mm. Someone fell in. It's essentially a boat ride around
animatronic jungle, river. Basically, isn't
it? The Amazon or something.
Yeah.
Apart from it actually has animals from every part of the world, doesn't it?
So yeah, and some hilarious little tableaus with hunters being chased by tigers, etc.
Yeah, but I think the main point of the Jungle Cruise is almost the skipper, isn't it?
Yeah, so you are guided around on your boat through these jungle vistas by a skipper who is actually a cast member who's on the boat with you. And the idea is that there's a kind of a script, but they are encouraged to write their own jokes and put their own spin on the script and make it their own.
Yeah, so it's a comedian's job, isn't it?
It basically is a comedian's job. You would have to have some pretty decent performing chops to be a skipper on the Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, because to do it time and time and time again.
Yeah.
I mean, how long is the ride? About 5 minutes?
10 minutes, maybe. Five to 10 minutes.
Yeah. So who knows how many times a day you'd be doing
it's basically
that.
An open mic comedy spot length.
Apart from you've got to keep the energy perky.
Yeah,
perky,
and you perky, can't perky. Lose the room.
No.
And you got no MC to warm the room up.
And you can't do any blue material. You can't suddenly, you know, lose your mind a bit and start making jokes about the Mum Jiggler.
No, you can't do any blue material. And you've also got to deal with the fact that you are dealing with multiple languages as well.
Yeah.
So in comedy terms, it is a tough gig.
So who's playing the skipper in the film, Lauren?
Well, originally, the film was going to star Tom Hanks and Tim Allen.
Two very good comedians.
Who are also together in Toy Story, of course.
Yeah. I mean, their comic chops are brilliant.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Oh, and the characters they made for Toy Story. Brilliant. So they would have had a very good on-screen relationship. However, that is now not going to happen because it is going to star instead Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne Johnson is
AKA
got
the
something
Rock.
Over Disney because, like, he's got I don't know, photographs of Mickey Mouse doing something he shouldn't be.
Yeah, has he got a file on Walt or something?
Yeah, because he's been in so many Disney films now, hasn't
he? Yeah, he was in Race to Witch Mountain a few years ago, and then subsequently Moana, of course.
Oh, are they the only two?
No. I'm sure he's in certainly a lot of children's films as well.
Yeah.
Do you remember he did The Pacifier?
He is basically Arnie, isn't he?
He's become the new generation
Arnie. Because Kindergarten Cop by Arnie is Dwayne's The Pacifier.
Totally, yeah. He's become an Arnie-like figure.
I do like Dwayne Johnson. Who could not like him? He's very likable.
Yeah.
And actually, he can be very funny as well.
But anyway, he is now going to be in the film of The Jungle Cruise, which is coming. And it says, he's said in the various interviews with him and so on, that it's going to be very similar to The African Queen.
Yeah, now, I was confused by that because that's very much an adult's film.
Oh, totally, yeah.
I mean, it's almost like Joseph Conrad's
Heart of
Darkness. There's an there's a real element of psychological and real threat to the whole thing.
Yeah.
But there's not actually as much action as a child would want.
It seems like a very weird... I mean, I can see how you could kind of make the Jungle Cruise a bit like the African
Queen.
Well,
only if you've got animals constantly flinging themselves at the boat as well.
Oh, right. So, well, but then that kind of makes sense.
Adds the threat. Oh, no, but yeah, no, you could make it like the African Queen, where not a lot happens.
Uh-huh.
There's a few leeches, and it's more about the relationship between the people on board.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Tom Hanks and Tim Allen slowly coming to terms with the fact they're falling in love.
Well, the thing...
But I just don't understand the relationship between the African Queen and the Jungle Cruise.
Yeah.
So that'll be very interesting to see... What the hell that means.
Yeah, I can't imagine it. However, what we do know about this film is, this is from the article that Rob sent us, The Rock's skipper character will have an abundance of puns.
Oh, it's exactly like the African Queen.
Oh, yeah, I remember all the puns in the African Queen.
Yeah. When they had all the leeches over them and they were like, don't
leech off me. This really sucks. Oh.
Yeah. You bloody
leech. Yeah, all those classic puns.
You suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Secondly, the movie will focus on a cruise through an, in inverted commas, amazing, fantastical, and cool world of an uncharted jungle. Now, this makes me think, are they going to do a supernatural element to it?
Is it going to be a bit Jumanji?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there are no uncharted jungles anymore, are there? Pretty much?
Not really. Not in the old sense.
So, no. This is what I thought. I bet it's something like The Rock taking a bunch of kids on a very normal jungle cruise, and hey, and over here we have blah, 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 and then suddenly
stuff,
a portal opens.
Stuff starts to go weird.
Or a kid has brought a mysterious doo-wobby on board, which suddenly starts glowing and takes them to a jungle cruise in another dimension.
Yeah.
Or something.
Or something like that.
Where the animals do something like, I don't know.
Make puns.
Yeah. So it's wall-to-wall puns.
Maybe the animals are all the ones making the puns and The Rock is just blinking at them.
Oh my God, this sounds like the worst film in the world.
Yeah, sounds brilliant. I can't wait to see it. And the only other thing that we know yet is that... I think it does now have a director confirmed.
Oh, yeah.
I was about to happily read out a fact that I'd written down about how it doesn't have a director. But originally, The Rock wanted to have Patty Jenkins, who did Wonder Woman.
Cool.
Would have been good. Wonder Woman was good fun. But now it's going to be Jaume Colet-Serra.
Who's that then?
Now, he is the guy, he's mostly a kind of action and horror film director. So he did Unknown with Liam Neeson. He did Orphan, which is a horror film. And he also did the remake of House of Wax with Paris Hilton.
Wow. Now it's just gotten even weirder.
This is just the weirdest idea.
This does not sound remotely Disney.
Okay, so let's recap. The Rock is going to star in a Disney reboot of The African Queen with a load of animals who do puns all the time, directed by the guy who did House of Wax with Paris Hilton.
The Rock is also on... he's been quoted as saying that they're looking for a visionary filmmaker. So they're not looking for a bog-standard... You know, a journeyman.
Right.
They're looking for someone who can take an idea and... take a high concept,
okay,
maybe.
So like a visionary director, that's like... That's you see, Ridley Scott or someone like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or David Lynch or
some... This is blowing my mind.
This sounds like the weirdest film ever.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that.
It must have a dark supernatural element to
it. There must be. And as you said as well, it'll almost certainly have some kind of environmental...
Oh, yeah, because Tomorrowland, the film, has an environmental bent to it.
Yeah, and Zootopia had a kind of a racism.
Yeah, and how can you do something about the Jungle Cruise when we're decimating the rainforest and everything
of
and
course.
It's getting to crisis point? How can you have a film about that without having an environmental message?
Yeah,
really?
Definitely. And it's all part of Disney's liberal agenda, which they're really pushing at the moment, which is cool.
Yeah, with so many snowflakes, we don't have to worry about a new ice age coming.
Yeah.
We do.
Oh, shit.
That's what I meant. We do have to worry.
We literally do have to worry about that.
Yeah. What we don't have to worry about is, what is it? The sun irradiating the earth because of the
lack
of global warming. That's it. Why have I forgotten the phrase
global warming? Are you feeling okay? Maybe we should wrap it up there.
Yeah, great.
Anyway, there you go. There's some more ideas.
I have to go take my meds.
Yeah, you go take your meds. Our cat is trying to get in the door.
Yeah.
Maybe we should finish off there. Yeah. So see you next time.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the Adults Do Disney podcast. If you'd like to suggest any other things that could happen in the Jungle Cruise film that makes no sense, please do drop us an email on adultsdodisney@gmail.com. Also, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Adults Do Disney. And if you want to help us out, please do leave a review on iTunes, because it really does help us out. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.